Blog Talk Radio.
Comment, make sure you season it well with respect, or you'll find yourself in danger of the curse of the fruit bat. So don't come here being a fruit bat, as this is a fruit bat free program. You are listening to Black My Color. I want to greet everybody to today's show. Welcome everybody to today's show. Hope today finds you doing well. If you would like to be a guest to call in to the show, the call-in number is 646-478-5284. That's 646-478-5284. And you can call in to talk about whatever the subject. Call in and talk about anything that's related to the subject matter. But once again, be aware of the aforementioned curse of the fruit bat. If you're a person who likes to indulge in just trolling and being disruptive and using excessive profanity and ad hominem attacks and character assassinations and gaslighting and stuff like that, you're going to have a very short period of time on this show. Okay. I don't care if you agree with me or disagree with me, but when you come on here and interact on this show, please show due respect. Okay. You know, we can finish the end of the day not agreeing on anything, but you know, we can still respect one another. We're still adults here. Okay. So if you want to come on here and you want to, you know, make this your thing and you want to try to take over the show and whatever, like a lot of people try to do in the past, your time is going to be very short on here, okay? Because I want people to get something out of this show. And making a lot of false accusations against people who come on this program or even the host, you know, it doesn't benefit anyone. Nobody learns from anything, and everyone's like, well, what did we just learn today? Nothing, you know, so. Don't come on here engaging in that type of activity, okay? And please, you know, please keep it down on the profanity, you know. I've been pretty lenient on the profanity in the past, you know, probably too lenient, but I really want the profanity, you know, kept down at a level because sometimes, you know, people think they can get a point across by using profanity. And you don't need to use profanity to get a point across. You might sit there and say, well, this is how I relate and everything. Well, you're on my territory now. Okay. So you don't have to involve yourself in profanity. Okay. So we're going to leave it at that. And what I wanted to talk about today is this issue about structural racism. And it's a topic I need to tackle. I've tackled it on here before, maybe not to the point that to the finer point that I should have, but let me pull this up. I had it pulled up, but today we talk about, you know, America being the land of the free, home of the brave, and then, you know, you got people saying, well, that might be so, but there's certain of us in here in this country who can't get ahead because of structural racism, you know, and then they go off into the thing about, you know, the trauma that we went through when we went through slavery and Jim Crow, and some of us are suffering from that trauma, and, you know, we can't get ahead because of all of this. And so we get into the critical race theory. We gotta talk about critical race theory. We gotta talk about white supremacy. We gotta talk about white privilege, because all of these things come through structural racism. And they say they basically talk about America like America is the biggest evil country in the world. Now let me tell you something. America is not a perfect country. No country is. No country is perfect. Okay. Yes, the era of Jim Crow, the era of slavery, is a dark mark on this country's history. But some people say that we are still suffering because of structural or institutional racism. And they talk like we go through this every day. Oh, every day we got to go through this and everything. And they talk like they talk for all of us. Like every last one of us can relate that we go through institutional and structural racism on a daily basis. And not only that, we think the only people who go through this so-called structural racism are black folks. Maybe Latinos, you know, maybe to some extent the Asians as well. But it's instituted by white supremacy. And we go through this thing every single day. This is why we can't get the jobs that we want. This is why we're not as healthy as we should be. This is the reason why we live in the poorest neighborhoods, because the system of white supremacy, which has instituted this structural racism, is what keeps us in check and keeps us from going ahead to better things. And so every time the voting period comes up, we all have to go out en masse and vote for people who we think is going to help tear down this structural racism. But we get the same complaints all the time. No matter who we put in the office, no matter if we think this person is going to be the savior of the black folks, so to speak, we think this person is going to come in and they're going to get rid of structural racism. But every year we still complain about how far back our black children are. We never look at ourselves and say, wait a minute, let's see what we can do instead of pointing our fingers at someone else. We never look and say, you know, well, maybe we need to bear the brunt of this so-called structural racism. Why our children would keep falling behind in school. Why our children are not as healthy as other children are. Why our children are not growing up in the prosperity that other children are growing up in this country. And it is so easy to point out the specter of structural racism and white supremacy for being the reason why black people don't get ahead in this country. So what is structural racism? So I'm at the American Medical Association's website, and it says structural racism refers to the totality of ways in which societies foster racial discrimination through mutually reinforcing systems of housing, education, employment, earnings, benefits, credit, media, healthcare, and criminal justice. These patterns and practices in turn reinforce discriminatory beliefs, values, and distribution of resources. According to Zinzi Bailey, SCD, MSPH, et al., whatever that means. But basically what it's saying is that there is a hidden code somewhere in the laws of our country that is designed to keep white people ahead and black people behind. And only those who are conditioned, you know, through public education or whatever, they're the ones who really get to see this encoding in these laws that hold back black people. Now, one question I have never had answered is, can you give me a specific example of this structural racism? And you get all kinds of excuses. Well, just look at our laws. Look at what happens to black people when we're arrested compared to when white people are arrested. You know, when white people are pulled over for a traffic stop, you know, they get to live another day. Black person gets pulled over for a traffic stop, they end up getting shot. That is one of the stupidest explanations, because that does not always happen that way. A black person being pulled over for doing 55 in a 35-mile-per-hour zone is not in more danger than a white person is for doing the same thing. Over my life, I'd say for the last 30-something-odd years, I have watched a pile of police videos, and I do not see where this is the case. I see a lot of white people going to jail because they disobeyed the police, and I see black people going to jail because they disobeyed the police. I see a lot of white black people that get off a lot of times. They don't get shot. And they talk like, you know, when a black person encounters a police officer, the police officer, if he's white and he's a white supremacist, he's going to pull out his gun and, you know, just shoot the black person and ask questions later. That's basically how you hear it. But does it happen like that? If we would be honest with ourselves, we would say a collective no. It does not happen that way. It becomes easy to point the blame of black failure on white supremacy. It becomes real easy. Oh, it's the white folks. Oh, you should see their schools compared to the black schools. Oh, you should see the neighborhoods that the white folks live in compared to the neighborhoods that the black people live in. And, you know, it becomes maddening, because I hear these people going back and forth about white supremacy and black failure and everything. I hear them going back and forth about it, and it's like, hey, y'all leaving someone out of the conversation. Because when I step into the conversation and I say, I grew up in the 70s and the 80s, and a lot of what they're saying that black people are failing at is not true, then I get called a coon. Major form of gaslighting that a lot of black leaders use against those who don't think like they do. I get called a coon. I get called a sellout. But all I'm telling you is from my experience. And people always saying experience is the best teacher. Well, I'm telling you my experience is that a lot of what we see black people going through today, And we have collectively believed that this is what black people go through every day, it is not the truth. How can you tell me? You don't know what, well, how can you tell me and you don't know what I've gone through? You see how that works? You're sitting there saying, I should pay more attention to your situation than you need to pay to mine. Because what is happening with you is what's happening to all of us. It's not happening to all of us. We bring up the instances of, you know, well, you know, the people who are more likely to be pulled over for speeding are black people. Now, given if a police officer pulls someone over for speeding, 9 times out of 10, they don't know the race of that person who is speeding. They're not sitting there saying, oh, that's a black person speeding right there. Okay, let me pull them over. Oh, that's a white person. Let them go. And none of the black people ever stop and think and say, maybe the reason why more black people are pulled over for speeding than white people, because maybe more black people are speeding than white people. We don't want to think in that term. We don't want to think in that way. But that might be the case. We talk about why we have so many police officers in the black neighborhoods. Well, it's because in the black neighborhoods, there's a prevalence of criminal activity going on compared to the white neighborhoods. Now, don't get me wrong. There are ghetto white neighborhoods. But compared to the black neighborhoods, they don't have as much crime or criminal activity going on within their limitations, their borders, as the black neighborhoods do. And, you know, the way they talk like, oh, these police officers, they're just in the black neighborhoods to keep the black people in check. I very rarely have an interaction with a police officer, very rarely. I hear them going up and down the street, you know, with their sirens and flashing their light because they're going through some, you know, I don't know who they're after or whatever. But I never have an interaction with them. I've never been pulled over by the police and told to get out of the car. I've never been pulled over by the police while the police officer had his hand on his gun. But the way you hear our black leaders talk about this, this is going to be the case if you are a black person. If you're a black person, get ready for that police officer to have his hand on his gun. If you're a black person, get ready for that police officer to see you as a threat and be ready to fire at a moment's fire his gun off at a moment's notice. And you hear this, and then you get these people, they call themselves experts. Oh, I'm an expert on, you know, structural racism, institutional racism, you know, and I did a study. I've done a study and, you know, certain things, you know, I've done this study on, and yeah, the structural racism is the reason why black people are held behind. But what about those black people who pull themselves up by their bootstraps and now they're millionaires owning land, owning nice houses and things like that? I'm not talking about these crooked preachers out here. I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about actual successful black folks who stuck to their determination. They stuck to their goals. And they said, I'm going to do this thing. And I don't care. I come hell or high water. I'm not going to let anything cause me to give up. And now they're owning land. They got nice houses. They have the nice vehicles. They dress up in the nicest clothes. But when you mention those people, oh, they just slipped through the cracks or they just played up to the white man. And it's more of a damned if you do, damned if you don't scenario. If you fail in life, it's the white man's fault. If you succeed in life, oh, you just played up to the white man. You can't win with these rascals. the apostles of blackness, as I call them. You can't win with them. You just cannot win with them. And it's so true when they talk about the crab in the bucket syndrome. When one black person succeeds, you got a whole bunch of them trying to pull them down, trying to pull them down. Several years ago on this show, this was in 2009, I made the comment that if a white person came to me and they offered some advice to me that could help me get ahead in life, you doggone Skippy, he's going to get my ear. And so they're like, oh, if the white person does something that helps you out, oh, yeah, doggone Skippy. If a black person tells me something that's going to help me get ahead in life, he gets my ear too. I don't put color as a requisite for me for me listening to someone. If you're saying something and I perceive that this is going to help me get ahead in life, you get my ear. Bump your color. Yellow, black, red, brown, olive. I don't care. People think the only way you're going to be successful in life is if you get your mentorship from another black person, because only black can relate to black. If we had more black teachers, our kids would do better in school and all this crazy mess. If we had more black people in this area and more black people in that area, our kids will succeed. And we already see examples where that is not the case. But earlier this week, I was watching a YouTube video, and this so-called expert, well, the lady who was playing the show, you know, she's a Christian woman, but and she's not one of those, you know, blackety black types or whatever. But she was playing a clip of a lady who calls herself an expert on structural racism. And I just want to play this clip for you before I expound on it.
We did seek out to understand the relationship between structural racism and health, because we know that ethnic and racial minorities have much worse health than others in the United States, including higher rates of chronic conditions, acute conditions, and earlier death rates.
Okay, now, this lady, I forgot her name. I should have put her name up here. But this lady, you know, she's a so-called expert on structural racism. And basically what she's saying is the reason why black people tend to be unhealthier than their white counterparts is because of structural racism. Not because of the choices we make or anything like that, but because, you know, we have these food deserts, you know, you got certain places where certain stores have closed, you know, because of a high crime rate, but people keep saying, no, you just don't want black people to have anything. I just learned of I think it was a Target, was in a certain area for 17 years, and they could not make a profit during that 17 years. You know why? Because little black thugs kept coming into the store and stealing stuff. And that affected their profit margin. So they said, you know what, we can't make a profit here. So we're closing this store and we're going to move somewhere else. So the black leaders, they get out there, oh, no, you just don't want black people to have anything. You know, you all need to stay here. You need to stay here. Let people rob your stores. Which is one of the stupidest things I think I ever heard in my life. But when you're in business, the number one reason why you are in business is to make a profit. And if you're in an area that's not profitable, yes, you're going to close shop and you're going to move somewhere else. And unfortunately, a lot of these black neighborhoods don't have a lot of these big time corporations in their areas, because you got the little black thugs who keep coming in and thinking, hey, you know, today is the day of the five-finger discount. So I'm going to go here and I'm going to take advantage of this discount. If I get caught by the police, I'll just say, oh, you just stopped me because I'm black. I learned of an area in Washington, D.C. that I'm somewhat familiar with in Southeast D.C., where one of their major grocery stores called Giant is thinking about leaving because people keep shoplifting. And people are like, no, we need this place. We need this. We need this. And then you got black people up there who are crying, these elderly black people saying, you all did this to us. They're leaving because of you all. Oh, we're not going to listen to them. Oh, we talk about the wisdom of elderly all the time. But when they talk about a store leaving a certain place because of crime rate, nah, we ain't going to listen to you. Because, you know, we gotta cling to our racism. But let me go ahead. Let me go ahead and play this clip again.
So what we did was study over 260,000 North Carolinians who lived in 150 neighborhoods in Durham County, North Carolina. And what we did was measure structural racism in their neighborhoods and measure their health. And we define structural racism as factors which work together to create discriminatory conditions in neighborhoods that disadvantage ethnic and racial minorities. We looked at 16 factors, which included the neighborhood racial composition, education and employment rates in the community, income and poverty rates in the community, criminal justice, housing, voter participation, and even the amount of green space and tree cover in a neighborhood. And what we found, in short, was that if there was more structural racism in a neighborhood, the health of the neighborhood was worse. So if you had higher structural racism, you and your neighbors were more likely to have higher rates of kidney disease, diabetes, and high blood pressure. These are three major conditions that we're fighting against the United States and major conditions that we know that ethnic and racial minorities suffer worse outcomes from.
Okay, now. This lady, she calls herself an expert. She gets up on MSNBC and she says, we did a study of 260,000 people in Durham, North Carolina. People, where does yours truly live? Come on. I mean, if you've been listening to this show for some time, You know where I live, because I mention it every time I introduce this show. Where does yours truly live? I live in a place called Durham, North Carolina. And she said she studied 260,000 people who live in Durham, North Carolina. Now, let me tell you something. The city itself has 283,000 residents. The county overall has 324,000 residents. Now, I maybe I missed that day or something like that, but I don't remember anyone coming on my coming to my apartment, knocking on my door and asking me about structural racism. And I got ticked off when I heard this. I was ticked off because I live in Durham. I live 2 miles from the downtown area in Durham. And you know something about Durham? When you go to their government website, you'll see that there is a good deal of black people who play a hand and how this city operates. Our mayor is black. Our police chief is black. Our attorney general is black. Matter of fact, ever since I've lived in Durham, I first started living here in 1988, I think all but one of our mayors has been black. Now, this lady gets up here, she talks about structural racism. You know, she even goes to the point where she said, we even looked at how much tree space and green space that they have. Because, you know, if you don't have enough tree space or green space, You know, that means, you know, black people don't have an opportunity to get out and exercise and everything. Now, I have a lot of tree space around where I live, have parks around where I live. I can go to those parks anytime I want to. Most of the time when I do my exercise, it's in a place called South Point Mall, which is the mall here in Durham. South Point Mall is one of the 8 wonders of Durham, North Carolina. But a lot of times I go there to exercise. And we have a myriad of parks here. Nobody's being kept out of those parks. No black people have been stopped going into those parks. Maybe in the 60s that happened. But ever since then, no black person is ever prevented from going to a park. I can go to one of the nearest parks here called Southern Boundaries. They have tennis courts, they have baseball fields, and they have basketball courts. I guarantee you go down to that basketball court, you'll see a bunch of black people down there playing basketball. They even got a trail that I sometimes like to walk around for exercise as well. Now, I don't know who this lady is, who she thinks she is or whatever. She hasn't done no study on no 260,000 people in Durham, North Carolina. She is telling a bald-faced lie. She's just perpetuating this victimhood mentality of structural racism, which she really didn't define. How is the lack of green space structural racism? Now, if you want to talk about structural racism in Durham, North Carolina, you got to include the black people in there too, because we have a significant number of black people who have a hand into how this city is run. Last year, I was invited to the opening of a nursing school because someone wanted me to take pictures. Because someone found out I like to take pictures and I want to start photography. And last year, our mayor was a black woman. And the mayor, she came to the opening of this school. And, you know, I'm out there just snapping away and everything. And everyone that got up there that had a hand in the Durham government, they were black. So people, can you tell me where this structural racism nonsense is coming from? Because if there is structural racism here in Durham, North Carolina, then our black government officials need to take some of that blame too. Our police chief is black. Our police chief is a black woman. Our head attorney general, black woman. Assistant attorney, black woman. And you want to sit here and talk about, in a clip, I'm getting a little ahead of myself, but she said she chose Durham because Durham is one of the cities that you can tell the difference between the poverty stricken and the rich folks in which you can find that in any city. You can find that in Baltimore. I loathe Baltimore, but there are parts of Baltimore that are like, wow. Washington, D.C., Richmond, Virginia, New York City. You see that disparity in any city, any good-sized city. Just find you a city that has at least 100,000 people. You'll see that disparity. But that has nothing to do with structural racism. It has to do with the choices that a certain group of people like to make. If you're always eating unhealthy and everything, you have the choice. You don't give me this thing that you cannot go find healthier food to eat or healthier drinks or whatever. Don't give me this garbage. That is white supremacy that's keeping you unhealthy. Let me go on. This type of stuff, it just ticked me off. when I first heard this, and I'm like, this lady talking about she knows about Durham. She probably doesn't even live in Durham. She just said, let me just pick out Durham. Let me go ahead. Play another clip.
Discrimination through interconnected systems, including housing, education, and unemployment. Can you clarify for our audience how the prevalence of certain factors like inadequate housing and schools and even the quality of...
Okay, let me stop it right there. 4 years ago, about 4 years ago, I got a new job. I had been laid off from another job. I was a temporary. And they decided they didn't want me there anymore. So they said, Vincent, your assignment is ended. Boom, boom, boom. And so I got a job interview from another job, from another temporary agency, another contracting agency. And they said, Vincent, we want you to come in for an interview. And these people, they were great. They fixed up my resume, everything. And they said, we want you to come in for this interview. Now, let me tell you something about me. I'm the type of person, I do not like to dress up. I do not like to wear a suit and tie. I do not like to wear shiny shoes and all that crazy mess because it's uncomfortable. Just to be honest with you. I'm just going to be honest with you. I think it's kind of legalistic how people have gotten this image that, oh, you're dressing it up in a suit and everything. That means you're dressed for success. Not all the time. But these folks said, Vincent, we want you to come in for an interview. Now, nobody told me how to dress to come to this interview. I hadn't worn a tie. This was 2020. I hadn't worn a tie since 2011. Because after 2011, I was like, man, bump this tie junk. I don't want to wear no tie. Get this tie off. I don't want no tie. Because I don't like ties. I never did. But I'll tell you one thing. I said, I want a job, and I want, because I want to be able to pay my bills. Guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to swallow my pride, and I'm going to wear a tie. So I got out the ironing board, ironed my pants, put on the tie, put on the shoes, went to the interview. That day, by the end of that day, they said, Vincent, you got the job. Now, guess when I got this job? I already mentioned the year 2020, so that kind of gives you a clue. But I got this job in the end of March of 2020, right when the pandemic was starting. Right when it was starting. Matter of fact, I think the day I got the job, they started, talking about these lockdowns and everything in the U.S., I think the very day that I started, that's when they started the lockdowns and you got to wear the mask and all this crazy mess. And, that's for another show. Here it is almost 4 years later. I'm at that same job. And not only that, a couple of days ago, one of my boss's supervisors said he wanted to talk with me. And whenever someone says the boss wants to talk with you, I get kind of nervous because they might come and say, well, Vincent, you've done good, but your assignment's going to end and whatever, And I get nervous like that. Or maybe there was a discrepancy in my work and everything. I try to do my work to the best of my ability so no one can come and say, Vincent, your work is sloppy. I try to do my work to the best of my ability. So My boss, he said, Vincent, so-and-so wants to talk to you. And, I was joking. I was sitting there like, man, what did I do now? He said, oh, no, nothing that you've done. So I talked to this supervisor, and he said, Vincent, basically what he was saying is we see you as very valuable, so we're going to give you a $4 an hour raise. And I'm sitting there like, what you talking about, Willis? I was like, a $4 an hour raise? Are you kidding me? That is probably the biggest raise I think I've gotten in my life, in my entire working life. $4 an hour? Shoot, I'd be happy with just a dollar an hour. I'd be happy with 50 cents. At least it's going in the right direction. Now, once again, where are these people when I get these raises and get these jobs and I'm staying on a job and I'm being productive and everything? Where are these people at who want to talk about structural racism? And see, when I got my interview, when I took my interview, I was already in my 50s. I was 52 years old when I got this job. And from what I saw after I got the interview, there were two people who were younger than I was, significantly younger than I was. They looked like they were in their 20s. They didn't get the job. I did. And not only that, they said, Vincent, you are the first person in this position that has lasted longer than a year and a half. Because I take my work seriously. I want to get my work done. When a pile of work comes in, I don't sit there and complain and be like, oh, gosh. I look at it, I say, man, okay, so we got all these supplies now, so I can get this mess off the list, because they give us a list every morning, and we have to knock these things off the list. And if we keep up with the list can stay at one page. And I play a game. I say, you know, I want to see this list get as small as I possibly can get it. That's my mentality. So I don't complain when a lot of work comes in. People say, well, Vincent, you're going to be mad at me. We got a lot of work for you. You ain't making me mad. That means I got work. That means I won't be, that means I don't have any idle time. That means I have to pull up my sleeves, get out there, get my work done. But you get a lot of people, and younger people at that. Look, I'm in my mid-50s. Some of these young people, they slug around like something is like the legs are broken or something. And me, I come in with a positive attitude every day. And I'm like, look, I'm going to get my work done. That's all I care about, getting the work done. There is no need for you to be filling out an application, which is one thing I don't understand about some people. There is no need of filling out the application, and then you get the job, and then you don't want to do the job. And you want to sit there and complain about what the job is doing and what it ain't doing and everything. You know, now look, if you want to complain about it, just go ahead and complain, but just get your job done. Now, me, I want to get my job done. I don't want people saying, I don't want the chief, the chief supervisor to come in and say, Vincent, we've noticed you're 2 weeks behind. Why is this? Plenty of time to get this work done. They said one of the people who worked ahead of me in my position, they noticed that he was missing. And they found him sleeping in a closet, taking a nap. They hurried up and fired him. I said, no, y'all ain't going to find me sleeping in an old closet. No matter how tired I am, you ain't going to find me sleeping in an old closet, because I'm here to get my job done. And now I got this job at the beginning of the pandemic of the U.S.'s involvement in the pandemic. And I've had this job for 4 years. And when I finished talking to this supervisor, he said, Vincent, I put in a good word for you. Now, can you all guess the race of my supervisor? Anyone want to take a stab at my supervisor's, at my boss's race? Anybody want to take a stab at it? Oh, you don't? Okay, well, I'll help you out. My boss is white. And there's no mistaking that he is white. And I get along very well with him. We joke with one another, you know, a couple of times he's taking me out to lunch. We get along very well. When you all come up and start talking this institutional and structural racism garbage, this is why it gets me so ticked off. You all talk like all black people go through this. That we can point to some time where a boss man shows some type of prejudice against us because we were black. I can't do that. Do I believe that there are prejudiced white folks in the workforce? Yes, I do. Yes. Is my boss a prejudiced man? Well, he certainly doesn't seem like it. Taking a black dude to lunch without asking for anything in return. If he is, he's the worst racist I've ever seen next to Donald Trump. Donald Trump got to be the worst racist I ever seen. People keep calling him racist. I don't see it. But anyway, let me go ahead and finish out this clip.
Nearby medical facilities, they are all indicators of structural racism, which can then negatively affect these actual health outcomes.
Yeah, thank you so much, Charles, for having me. An honor to be on with Dr. Bolaire. Thank you for this study. It's so important to informing what policymakers need to do. I think so often we think about health as individual choices that patients make. And instead, we really need to understand how practices and policies, you know, the legacy of slavery, the legacy of Jim Crow, current-day systemic racism.
There to go with the whole legacy of Jim Crow and slavery again. And did you hear they say, oh yeah, we've been she's basically saying we've been taught that, you know, it has to do with people's individual choices, but we need to understand that, you know, things such as, you know, Jim Crow and slavery, this adds to the structural racism. Oh, I got more.
The health of our communities. So when we have people who have housing insecurity, who live in food deserts, who live in communities where there's not enough green space for them to walk around or to work out, where they're not able to find gainful employment, where they're not able to have quality education, we know that racism is a key driver of what we call the social determinants of health. And what we see in terms of health inequities and health disparities are the downstream outcomes of those. And so I think it's so important for us to connect the dots. Like, the dots that need to be connected are that, you know, individuals are only responsible for about 20% of what makes them healthy. The other 80% are these systemic factors that Dr. Bolaire and her colleagues studied in this very, very important research that needs to inform how, you know, communities and resources are given. So, for example, we have seen a chronic disinvestment in Black communities and communities of color, which have led to these poor health outcomes. So the results that, you know, Dr. Bolaire's study showed really needs to inform policies that impact health on a more holistic level. So it's not just about what medications a physician prescribes or a health professional prescribes. It's about what is the prescription for making a community healthier? What will allow it to have higher quality education, better job opportunities, more green space? All of that is critically, critically important. And I'm so glad that we are now discussing those factors instead of what happens inside of an exam room or a clinic room.
Oh boy, I tell you. You know, she talked about green space so people can be more active and everything. You don't need green space to be active. Sidewalk works just fine. The problem is a lot of times when you set up these areas, you know, to be beneficial to a certain area, you always got these little thugs that come in and mess up everything. They don't say anything about that. It's always racism. Everything is racism. Your obesity, that's because of racism. Without realizing there are white folks who are suffering as well. Everything is racism. I mean, I don't know if you all remember the African American Museum up in D.C. They had this flyer, and they were saying that, you know, being on time and being proper and being polite and everything, all that is connected to racism. Stupid stuff like that. And nobody ever, it never passes anyone's mind to say, well, what about the choices you make is the main reason why, that the main determining factor in your life has nothing to do with somebody else has done. It has to do with the choices you make in your life. Now, I'm not saying that if you make all the right choices that you're going to become a billionaire or anything like that, but your life will be more successful. But you listen to these people bloviate and just shoot off at the lip about racism. This is the reason why black people live in the neighborhoods that they do. When you can point out vast neighborhoods around the country where there are black people, a sustainable black community. I can take you to Cary, North Carolina, which is almost always on the list of one of the most desirable places to live in the United States of America. And I can show you where black people live. I can show you black people who are making six figures, figure salaries here in the Durham, North Carolina area. Durham, North Carolina is part of an area called the Triangle. It consists of Durham, Raleigh, and Chapel Hill. They call it the Triangle. You have a sizable amount of black people who live in 3,000 square foot homes. I should know because a couple of my best friends live in a place right outside of Durham called Creedmoor. I was there for Christmas. Now, this dude is younger than I am. He's in his 30s. And he lives in a 25 square foot home. His older sister, she and her family, they live in, an almost 3,000 square foot home. Black folks. Don't give me this BS. And when I say BS, I mean beaver scat. Don't give me this BS about why black people can't get ahead today. And here's the thing that gets me, though. This is the thing that gets me. You got a lot of successful black people out there who are making six figures, and they still think they're being held back by the white man. When they themselves are making proportionately way more than the average black person, white person does in this country. I always talk about Oprah Winfrey and her billions. And she gets up there talking about white supremacy and everything, and she makes more than your typical white person makes. I can guarantee you, every white person I have known personally, if I put them together in one group and compare that group to Oprah Winfrey's success, that group of white people wouldn't even come close to the success Oprah Winfrey has made. Or Jay-Z, or any of the rest of them, Beyonce. But yet and still, we want to cry and moan about white supremacy. And then these people, they get on their high horses. They get on their soapboxes and act like they're talking for all black people in this country. And when you say, excuse me, I'm not one of those black people. Shut up. I'm talking for you. No, you're not. You're not talking for me. You don't speak for me. How dare you think you speak for me? And you get up there and you start talking your garbage. and you think you're doing me a favor, you're not doing me a favor at all. And don't dare call yourself a black leader, because you're not leading me. All you want to do is lead me into your own form of racism. If people call it reverse racism, no, it's not reverse racism. Racism is racism. And these people get up here and they act like they're our savior. I'm William Barber. I'm the savior of the black people. I'm Al Sharpton. I'm the savior of the black people. I'm Jesse Jackson. I'm whoever. Name your favorite black leader. Louis Farrakhan as well. And they think they are savior to the black people. But none of them have ever come up and spoke to me personally. None of them have ever come and said, hey, Vincent, hey, tell me about yourself. Just like this lady whose recording I was playing, she said she studied 260,000 families in Durham, North Carolina. I live in Durham, North Carolina. She ain't never knocked on my door. And 83 people who live within the city limits, 324,000 people who live in the entire county. She ain't never come down knocking on my door. And just because we don't have an ample, I got plenty of green space around here. I can go to three city parks right now within 2 miles of where I live. But she said, oh, it's a lack of green space. Black people don't have a place to exercise. I don't even think you ever been to Durham, North Carolina. I just think you made some phone calls to some people, say, hey, is structural racism going on in your neighborhood? Oh, really? Okay, I can check that box. Boop. Thank you. Call up someone else. Structural racism in your in your community? Yeah. Oh, okay, good. Check that box. Okay, thank you. There's no structural racism in Durham, North Carolina. Well, how do you know? You grew up in Washington, D.C. Yeah, but I lived in Durham, North Carolina since 1988. Going on 38 years, I've lived here. And there is no structural racism in Durham, North Carolina. And the people in Durham, they can sit there and say, oh, yeah, I lived here all my life. I know there's structural racism. No, it is not. There is no structural racism in Durham, North Carolina. I mean, someone tell me. Someone show me. You know, pretend I'm from Missouri. Anyway, I'm getting to the end of the first hour. I'm going to go ahead and do my advertisements. Oh, Pianchi's here. Okay, cool. I'm going to go ahead and do the advertisements, and when I'm done, I will see you all on the other side. You are listening to Black by Color only on CNM Radio.
CNM is growing again, and we are proud to announce our new show coming up next with host Suzette, and it will be airing on Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern. Suzette is a constitutional scholar and health professional who has hosted shows on BTR since 2009. She currently hosts Welcome to Suzette Live Talk on Spreaker. Tune in for Coming Up Next with Suzette at 7 p.m. Eastern on Wednesdays, heard through Conservative Nation Media, where we can depend on the truth always being told and where America always wins. Conservative Nation Media has been around for 11 years now, to give you the news that is fit to know about the state of America and what the politicians in Washington and around our nation are doing to our freedoms. We have strived to give you the true news that you cannot find in lamestream lying liberal media, and because of our love for this great nation, we are growing again. With new shows on CNN like American Statesman with Sally Baptiste and Crazy Nation Radio with Ron Reck, we are getting well-known names to join our network to make CNN a stronger voice for America. We have others who may be joining us too. American Statesman airs on Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, and Crazy Nation Radio airs mostly on Tuesdays at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, with other times of the week when he feels the need is there. Join Conservative Nation Media for all of our shows on Friday, Saturday, Monday, and Tuesday with our Sunday show, American by Design, returning too. That's Conservative Nation Media, where America always wins.
When I grow up, I want to be a new pair of blue jeans.
When I grow up, I want to be a kid's first computer.
When I grow up, I don't want to be a piece of garbage. And if you recycle me, I won't be.
Give your garbage another life. Recycle. Learn how at iwanttoberecycled.org. Brought to you by Keep America Beautiful and the Ad Council.
All right. Welcome back to the show. If you'd like to be a guest to call in to the show, call in number is 646-478-5284. That's 646-478-5284. Let me play this clip again.
I chose Durham. Sorry. You asked me about why we chose Durham, and I just wanted to say Durham, North Carolina has a huge range of living conditions, all the way from severe poverty to extreme wealth, and so provided an opportunity for us to look at this for the first time, and then to take several different types of data that were available and from the community, public records on income and poverty, criminal justice, but then also compare those to health records that have been made publicly available by the county public health so that we could look at neighborhood health.
Dr. Black.
That wasn't the clip I wanted, but let me go to the clip I wanted. Get this one.
We did seek out to understand the relationship between structural racism and health because we know that ethnic and racial minorities have much worse health than others in the United States, including higher rates of chronic conditions, acute conditions, and earlier death rates. So what we did was study over 260,000 North Carolinians who lived in 150 neighborhoods in Durham County, North Carolina. And what we did was measure structural racism in their neighborhoods and measure their health. And we define structural racism as factors which work together to create discriminatory conditions in neighborhoods that disadvantage ethnic and racial minorities. We looked at 16 factors, which included the neighborhood racial composition, education and employment rates in a community, income and poverty rates in the community, criminal justice, housing, voter participation, and even the amount of green space and tree cover in a neighborhood. And what we found, in short, was that if there was more structural racism in a neighborhood, the health of the neighborhood was worse. So if you had higher structural racism, you and your neighbors were more likely to have higher rates of kidney disease, diabetes, and high blood pressure. These are three major conditions that we're fighting against the United States and major conditions that we know that ethnic and racial minorities suffer worse outcomes from.
Now, y'all heard that, you know, and, you know, the thing that infuriated me about that was I live in Durham, and I can tell you from the 38 years that I have lived here, that is not true. What she just said, amount of green space and all that and everything. Like I said, I can point out three city parks that I can go to. I can walk to them less than 2 miles from where I live, three of them. Two of them right up the street here, less than a mile from where I live, they're right across the street from each other. And one of them is right outside of one of the richest neighborhoods in Durham. And when you go by that park, you see black people, you see Hispanic people, you see white people in that park all the time. Matter of fact, when I lived in Fort Washington, Maryland, right outside of Washington, D.C., the park that I used to like to go to was a place called Tucker Road. And there was another park in Clinton, Maryland called Kosciuszko Regional Park. Oh, we definitely had to drive to those parks. But not here in Durham. Now, I don't know what kind of game this woman is trying to play or who she's trying to fool or whatever, but she's not fooling me. But people with this mindset of structural racism in their areas, they will gladly gravitate towards her words. You know, you can come up to anybody in Durham, North Carolina, any black person, and ask them, is there structural racism in your city? And they will say yes. But it's not true. Now, I'm not saying this because, you know, I'm trying to be, what's the word? I'm not trying to be contrary to everybody and say, this ain't going on. Blah, blah. It's not. Not one time have I been kept from going to a park here in Durham, North Carolina. Not one time. And I already talked about how I got the job that I'm here in Durham, North Carolina. Just got a $4 an hour raise on my job. Been working this job for 4 years since the pandemic in the United States began, since the United States entered the pandemic. March of 2020 was when I started this job. And I've been working at the same job ever since. Now, nobody can tell me that there's a lack of economic opportunities or job opportunities or any of that other mess. Nobody can tell me that. And I would be lying to say that I never got the opportunity to get a job in my 50s. And I listen to people on YouTube talk about we need to create more opportunities for our young people so they won't get involved in crime. We got the opportunities. We have the opportunities. They just choose to ignore them because the opportunities we have requires some work. And a lot of us are too lazy to do work. We don't want to take that time to put in our due diligent work habits, whatever word I'm trying to find there. We are not doing our due diligence in working to make our lives better. The only time we think we're working to get our lives better is when it's time to vote. And we think the government is going to do everything that we need to get done. And we just sit around on our fat butts and watch Netflix all day because the government's going to take care of us. That's not how it should be, people. That's not how it should be. But we'll listen to this woman because she's some type of scholar, got a PhD. Oh, yeah, she went to Harvard or whatever school she went to. Oh, she's educated. She know what she's talking about. She's a proud black woman. She's a beautiful black queen. So we're going to listen to her. And we're going to ignore the obvious that is going on in our neighborhoods. Let's ignore the black-on-black crime. Oh, black-on-black crime, that's just a diversionary tactic by the white supremacists No, black on black crime is very real. Most black people in Durham who get killed, they're killed by another black person. And Durham has just become a shooting gallery. In 2021, we had 50 murders in Durham, North Carolina. That was the highest in this city's history. And judging from what I'm seeing now, we might break that record again this year. 50 homicides in 2021. And a lot of people say, 50? Oh, that ain't a lot. I live in a city where they had 500. Yeah, but a city the size of Durham. Durham, like I said, Durham, the city itself has 283,000 citizens. This is not New York City or Detroit or Los Angeles. We don't even have 500,000 people living in the county. But we'll give ear to these black leaders that say, okay, white supremacy, white racism is the reason why we can't get ahead. We're unhealthy because of food deserts. A lot of you all know how to drive, right? You got a driver's license? So what, if the store's not in your community, there's some that are close enough. I live less than half a mile from a Food Lion. I choose not to go to Food Lion because I'd rather go to Target or Walmart or Sam's. Have to drive a little further to get to those places, but I can still get there. It doesn't, no skin off of my back. Bought groceries today. My wife had to get her hair done today, and, I came home kind of late from a breakfast this morning. I asked her, did she still want me to get her breakfast? She said, no. I said, okay, well, I'm just going to go ahead and buy these groceries. Went to the Target, excuse me, got the groceries. There ain't no problem with me. Now, what I'm trying to say, folks, is there is no excuse for black people being unhealthy or poverty-stricken in any given area. We have the same opportunities that everyone else does. We have those same opportunities. I talked about that girl who won the spelling bee a couple of years ago. Zayla Avant-Garde, I think that's her name. Zayla Avant-Garde. And the black people were just fawning over her. Oh, she won the spelling bee. Oh, see, white people, we can win the spelling bee too. Yeah, you could have won it a long time ago. You could have won it a long time ago. She wasn't kept out of the spelling bee because she was black. Her father knew she had a talent, and they studied 15,000 words a day. All those other spelling bee contestants, they had a head start on her. A lot of them were groomed since they were kindergartners so they can win the spelling bee in their teenage years. This girl only had a few years, but her father saw something in her and said, hey, I'm going to enter my daughter into the spelling bee. Got into the spelling bee, boom, she got it. And people say, oh, well, see, white people, we couldn't. Nah. First of all, that's her award. That's not black people's award. And second of all, what that little girl showed by winning the spelling bee, she inadvertently showed the rest of us, we could have been doing this a long time ago. Oh, she was a Ghanaian. Was she descended from Ghanaians or was she born in Ghana? Because I know she lived in Louisiana. But the mere fact is that we could have done that a long time ago. I guarantee you, my parents, I won a spelling bee in the fifth grade. had 2 fifth grade classes, we were on teams and everything. And I won the spelling bee, fifth grade, back in 1979. Of course, it ain't something big as Scripps spelling bee or anything like that, but I won the spelling bee. I didn't get a trophy, you know, as a reward. I got a package of Juicy Fruit gum. But I probably could have won the spelling bee too in the second and the fourth grades, because those are the other times I remember when I was in a spelling bee and I didn't win it. You know, I probably could have won in the second grade and I probably could have won in the fourth grade. But this time I was determined. I wanted to win this spelling bee. I wanted to win this spelling bee, and I did. And this is a class with half black and half white kids in it. And this is why I don't give excuses for black folks falling behind. I don't care what adversity you're going through in your area. You can overcome it. You're going to have some adversity. You're going to have some adversity. You're going to have those people say, oh, you can't do it. You might as well give it up. And see, me, the problem with me was, for a long time, I listened to those people that said, you need to give it up. But then I got to the point where maturity took over. I said, nah, I'm not giving up anything. You're sitting there telling me I need to give it up. Then what have you accomplished? What have you accomplished? So don't tell me what I can and can't do, and you haven't accomplished jack squat diddly. I don't care where you live. No one can keep you from accomplishing anything. No one, really. And see, that now, shoot, we live in the United States of America. All these opportunities we have. Why do you think people keep trying to break through our borders? If we're such a racist country and all this and everything. Go to another country. Tell me how many people are breaking into those borders compared to the United States. Like I said, I don't give any excuse to any black person for not being successful. I don't give any excuse. But I have one thing to say about these people that go around and they talk about, you know, structural racism, and they act like they talk for black people. This is what I think about them.
I'm surrounded by idiots.
I'm surrounded by idiots. That's what I think. But anyway, looks like it's about that time. I think it's about that time. It's a little rainy outside right now, but I don't think that's a handicap to the fruit bats out there. That's my fruit bat alert. That means I'm going to the phones. And like I said, at the beginning of the show, if you are a person who wants to indulge in ad hominem attacks, excessive profanity, character assassinations, trolling, gaslighting, things of that sort, don't come on here with this stuff. Okay. You know, we're here to do a we're here to have a decent conversation. That's why I want people to learn something from this show, not just from me, but I want them to learn something from my guests as well. And if you're a person you want to be combative every time you come on this show, you know, this is not the show for you. Okay. So having said all that, let me go to the phone. I thought I had two people in my queue. Hello, welcome to the show.
Vincent, what's been going on, man? Did you have a nice holiday?
Yeah, it's a long holiday.
Yeah, I don't know what the – I wanted some examples of some structured racism in the United States. Now, if that's it, I can point out structured racism in other countries. But I don't know what that is. You know, something I would advise you to do, go to your voter registration office and remodify your application. And if you checked black, change it to other.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah.
Because I've done that. See, that's how those federal judges use data to say that, well, we need to have another black voting district.
Yeah, yeah. That's a great idea. That's a great idea.
And I don't know how it is in your district. You need to check independent if you don't want to be identified either as Republican or Democrat. But if you check now,
I'm an independent. I'm already independent. I was independent when I first registered to vote. I saw Republican.
Yeah.
I saw Democrat. I said, oh no, nah, I'm independent.
That way you can cross over if you wanted to and vote for the weaker candidate who's going to run against your candidate of your choice. So that's the reason I did it. And if you get a chance, go to Convention of States Article 5 and sign that petition. It don't obligate you to anything. It just shows that you know, you can research it, but it shows that you stand for the ability of the states to amend the U.S. Constitution on areas like term limits, fiscal spending, and federal overreach. And don't forget to check text, because they also have a boots-on-the-ground arm of COS called COS Action, and they will keep you informed of issues that's coming up in your state legislature, whereas you can send your legislator a text message giving you approval or disapproval, and you can also have access to a dial phone number that you can click, and it'll connect you by phone to either your representative directly or answering service or their secretary, and tell them that you approve or disapprove our measure.
Okay.
One that we used is here was on several issues, but the one that the governor, who's a Democrat, he's gone now, he vetoed all of them. But the legislature overruled one having to do that a child under 18 can't be forced to undergo gender reassignment without parental approval. So they overruled that veto, and that's not a law in Louisiana.
Okay, that's good. That's good.
And, you know, you would have to ask yourself, why in the world would somebody be against that? Why would you be against a parent having that type of say-so over their own child?
Yeah, I never understood that.
It's just like this stuff, you know, not saying that you indulge in it, but to go to porn sites, you got to prove that you're 21 to be able to watch people who's 18 performing actors.
That's sick.
Ain't that something else?
I mean, for real.
So there's some crazy things going on.
Yeah.
With the election and these prosecutors and these people coming back from when you was in high school and now you're 70, saying that you raped them and all that old crazy mess. And you have to ask the mentality of the jury. Now, what jury would sit to convict somebody that's being accused of doing something, heck, 50 years ago, actually 60 years ago in some cases?
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
Who's that lady that, who's that lady that Donald Trump has to pay the $53 million to, you know? I'm sitting there like, y'all got to be kidding me. You got to be kidding me.
And see what that does, that opens up for other people to be doing some new crazy stuff too.
Yeah.
Because you know everybody's out for making money. And it's, and you know, a lawsuit is about handing a person a piece of paper. You still got to collect even if you won a case.
Yeah, exactly.
And then, too, it also shows the ridiculousness of these courts, these judges. Until you take a judge and kick them out on their butt because what they're doing, they're acting out in bad behavior.
That's right. That's right. My wife agrees with you.
These judges are crazy. And, you know, people need to start teaching their kids early on about the documents and the founding of this country and about the Constitution, because courts cannot make laws. Oh. Supreme Court can rule and give an opinion. That's it. A state don't have to follow the Supreme Court.
Yeah,
because in no place in the Constitution does it give them the right to make laws. The only two entities in the nation that can make laws is the Congress and the state legislature.
That's right.
Ordinances can be made by municipalities and cities. That's the ordinance that control your behavior within their boundaries. But if you go into another community, what you had to follow in the one you left don't apply.
Yeah.
And people don't understand that. If that's the case, you voting locally, you voting for the statewide, then you voting federally, then you listen to a judge. Well, what the heck's used to going to vote anyway?
Yeah. You're right. He's so corrupt.
Yeah. So
everything's so corrupt. The judges are corrupt in New York. They're all corrupt.
That's my wife.
Yeah, I like listening to her better than you sometimes.
Okay, let's go. But did you hear about New York? I think it's $53.3 million. Trump should pay all that money. And I'm like, okay, Trump he has already said he didn't do anything to that woman. Why the judge knows full well that he didn't do it, but because of hatred, it is because he didn't like Trump, so he purposely did that. He purposely wanted to pay that. He purposely wanted to pay that, $53.3 million? And Trump, like, I didn't do it. I didn't touch her. I didn't do anything. But because she said, because he criticized me, so he need to pay. That's ridiculous.
Well, the woman say he did, he say he didn't. Now, who else was there to say that either one of them is right?
Yeah, exactly.
Nobody.
Yeah.
But this is what Trump lawyer brought a proof, and they said this is the proof. This is what this lady is saying is a lie. It's not true. This is the proof. But the judge said, I don't want to hear the truth. No, you can put that truth back. I don't want to hear the truth. I just want to hear the side of the woman. And that's not fair. He had the proof. The lawyer, Trump lawyer had the proof that she was lying, that he didn't criticize her, but others criticized her before he criticized her. But she said, because of Trump criticizing her, and she have like a target on her back, so she's suing him for that.
Well, people may have a target on their back, but that don't mean that others need to shoot at it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's right.
You can go to Walmart and buy a T-shirt that's got target on it. So does that mean that others need to shoot at it?
I mean, for real, I don't think you want to buy a Target T-shirt at Walmart anyway.
So people don't use common sense nowadays. It's a plague. If you ever pay any attention, people don't use any critical thinking nor common sense nowadays. They just react on emotion.
Yeah.
You remember the old Soul Train? You remember Soul Train? And they had a puzzle they had to solve. You know, they had letters they could.
Train, yeah.
Right. And then when they got through solving the problem, what did they do? They went back
they
to
went
dancing,
off dancing
and shaking their butt. It's a celebration. It's a celebration. That's the way people are today. They react emotionally and go back to celebrate.
Yeah. And see, that's why I played that clip of that lady. I forgot her name. She was on MSNBC, and she was talking about Durham, North Carolina. You know, we studied 260,000 families in Durham, North Carolina. And I'm like,
you
in
need
the
to get her on your show.
I just to debate with her, because that was just a swig of garbage. Because I live in Durham. I've lived here since 1988. And she's talking about, you know, lack of green space and systemic racism and all this. And I said, I've lived here since 1988. And I know there are people who live here longer than I have. They were raised here. They'll say, it's systemic racism. I can tell you from experience, living here in Durham, North Carolina, I have never experienced what they call structural racism. You know, and they saying that, you know, this is the reason why we're so fat and we're out of shape in the black community and all this and everything. It's because of racism. Without thinking that, hey,
how does racism got anything with you getting fat and can't wear your clothes? Hell, it's supposed
to
be the other way around. Racism would mean that you don't have nothing to eat.
Yeah, exactly. That's one of the points right there, you know. And you know, I'm sitting here like, well, you're basically saying, in a roundabout way, that black people can't think for themselves. That's basically what you're saying. We make our choices because racism tells us to choose the Coca-Cola instead of the bottled water or whatever. You know, you're telling me that, you know, racism is telling me to reach for the candy instead of the peanuts, or, you know, instead of a healthy. Nah, we have, every one of us has a mind that we have a will to do what we know is right. And if you're sitting there telling me that somebody else has a control over your will, I have a serious problem with that. And to me, that's racist. Because you're telling me as a black person, hey, I can't think for myself, so somebody's got to do the thinking for you. So that's why we got to elect these government officials so they can do the thinking for you, because you can't do it for yourself because of Jim Crow and slavery, you know, and
so
all that mess.
Like if that is used as a litmus test, people are obese now and big, and now they want to say that's because of racism. But look at these people that's walking across the border. They don't look like they're starving and coming from a phantom to me.
Yeah.
Women are four-breasted with about 40, 44 double Ds and wide hips. They ain't in brand new tennis shoes. They ain't starving. So where is the oppression that they are escaping from? That's a bunch of bull crap is what it is.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, and like you said, it's a lack of common sense. A lot of people don't do critical thinking, and really it doesn't take a good education to learn critical thinking. I think critical thinking is akin to common sense, and you really don't need a vast education to learn how to use God-given common sense. You know, I just don't know what goes into I think people just want to play this victimhood mentality because it helps to pay them. helps them to get paid,
well,
and then you got these elites.
See, you got the left was using these various incidents and opportunities that this woman just gave in order to try to gander a political position. You know, one thing that we got out of Donald Trump, it made people start thinking and begin to see exactly what the heck's going on.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, how the Democrats are maneuvering and architecting a bunch of false narratives. Look at your news media, your Rachel Maddox, your Joy Reid, and that other guy. I can't think of his name. Hell, his wife, his white wife divorced him. So
who's that?
Those people lie.
I think Roland Martin is the prince of the...
No, not Roland Martin, but he's one, too. He's a pumpkin head.
He's
talking about
other
Van
guy.
Jones. Van Jones is...
Is
Roland Martin, then you got, I can't think of the other guy's name. You got Whoopi Goldberg.
Dr. Umar Johnson.
Well, he's really ridiculous. He don't know what to do with that money he got, and the FBI is watching him.
Yeah, exactly. So can you answer me this, though? Why is it so many of these people that are always bloviating about, you know, white supremacy and white privilege and everything, why is it that it seems like a good percentage of them are married to white people?
Well, 20% of black males that's marrying are marrying white women. It's probably because they can't find no good black woman. My grandson went over to Ghana, and he's engaged to a Ghanaian woman right now.
He
said, "Papa, I ain't marrying no American black woman."
Oh, my goodness. And my wife was telling me yesterday, one of my friends, his wife passed away in 2020, but he's about to get married again. He's about to marry a Kenyan woman. And my wife was
My wife.
Find anyone in the United States? I said, yes.
My wife has gotten in, too. So, it's a different.
You love Ghana, don't you?
I love the personality of the people, for one thing. Of course, human beings are human beings, but the personality and the people, and they view upon things, is a whole lot different than what it is here.
Yeah.
Much, much so. And the things that go on here are just totally ridiculous.
Yeah.
And like I said, a lot of it is politically inspired.
No,
inspired.
Guinea.
You lived in Guinea.
I live in Guinea
and Gambia.
And Gambia.
Okay.
Guinea and Gambia.
Okay.
And I live in Africa's too.
Okay. All right.
Guinea, Gambia, Africa's.
Okay. So you've been all over the place.
Yeah.
My wife can tell you
been
some stories.
Gambia. Gambia is right there across the Gambia River into Jufa Reef, where Kuta Kinte came from. The guy that played Kuta Kinte, well, my daughters, I got a picture of my daughters sitting with his great-grandmother and his great-great-grandmother. She visited. But you know the guy that played
Kuta Kinte? Mm-hmm.
Come to find out that his great-great-great-grandfather
was white. You should look that expression on his face. He was like, "What? No." And they're like, "Yes, your granddaddy is white and your cousin is white." He like, "No, I could fight you right now." I said, "What?" He wanted to fight the host. And the host said, You got a white granddaddy." Yes.
Angela Davis too. Her ancestors came over on the Mayflower.
Yeah, Mayflower, yeah. And she was like, no. And he's like, yes. He like, yes. She like, no, yes. She like, duh, she didn't know what to say. She was like heartbroken. I said, you raised yourself. Now you find out now. You better shut up and be quiet.
It takes, It takes the wind out of it.
Yeah, they need all they do is just raise hustler. They're just there to take money, to get money from people, white laborers.
They do it to get money out of these whites. Like, look at the money that was white organization gave to BLM.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And I think most of it came from white liberals. I think most of that money did come from white liberals. Yeah.
Well, the same thing happened during the civil rights movement. You had an organization. You had the Tectonic organ group. It was a group of 99 white corporations. Of course, you know it wasn't no black corporations back in the 60s, 64.
Yeah.
And it was organized by Stephen Correa. And his wife was Audrey Bruce Mellon. She's a great-granddaughter of the Mellon, Andrew Mellon.
Mellon
Foundation is still around today. So they, Stephen donated $1.5 million to the Big Six. Martin Luther King, Foreman, Whitney Young, and A. Phil Randolph, and, you know, a couple others. I can't name them all. But they was in CORE. They was the organization that was working on civil rights and at the same time fighting against each other. Southern Leadership Conference, which King was a member of, and they gave them $750,000 up front, and after the March on Washington, I think they got another. So, but they had to use it to bail out themselves out of jail and stuff like that. So that was white organizations that funded the civil rights movement at that time. And you see the same thing going on with BLM, which I think was nowhere near as legitimate as the one in 1964.
Oh, no. Nowhere near as legitimate.
No. So anyway, you know, your wife is from Liberia. I had a friend that was in the River G area. Are you familiar with that area?
No, I'm not familiar with it. I know my wife comes from she comes from Balmy County, which is in the northwestern part of Liberia.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, look, man, I got to get out of here.
Okay.
I don't know what
Thor,
me and Thor's talking about Texas, man. We thinking about going over there helping Abbott in his call to secure Texas border.
Okay,
Texas
just don't go there
right.
With no barbed wire. Don't go down there with no barbed wire. You know, you know it's inhumane to use barbed wire.
Well, you know, you're right. It's inhumane to go jump on it, think you're going to walk through it, too. Biden and his dumb self, or whoever his handlers are, know damn well that these states are sovereign. A sovereign country has got a right to protect their borders.
Yeah.
And although he's the commander in chief of the National Guard, but the militia, the state governor can call up the state militia, which are people. And they can come down there and protect their border if needed.
Yeah, that's right.
But anyway, man, I'm going to get off here.
Okay. All right. Thanks for coming on.
All right. I'll talk to you later. Nice meeting your wife, too.
All right. All right.
Bye-bye.
All righty. There we go. Oh, that was a good conversation, you know, that we had there. Yeah, that African accent that you all just heard, that's my wife. You know, and my wife, she watches a lot of politics on YouTube. You know, my wife, she's a lot smarter than she thinks she is. She really is. And I've come and I've talked to her, and she's taught me some things, you know, things that I don't know about. And You know, I'll be like, oh my gosh, you know, me, I get so tired of the political bickering, you know, that I keep hearing. And I know this year is going to be like, oh brother, we got to go through this again, you know, cause I'm like, oh nah, I don't, you know, me, a lot of times when you see me on YouTube, I'm watching a documentary or maybe a music video or something like that. You know, I just get so tired of the politics, the mudslinging and, you know, you're a moron, you're an idiot, you're this and you're that. And, you know, I get tired of it. And basically what the condition that the country is in right now, and I'm just saying this as an opinion and my personal point of view, what we're seeing in the country today all has to do with the hatred for one man, and that's Donald Trump. Everything that you see going on, you know, the January 6th, that mess going on in Georgia between, gosh, what's that woman's name? Fannie Wallace and Nathan, whatever his name is, you know, that going on, you know, that all this stuff has to do with a hatred for Donald Trump. And Donald Trump being sued for $53.3 million or whatever, all that is just an attempt to keep Donald Trump from running for president because they're getting desperate. They don't want this man to be president, and they're willing to pull out all the stops. They're willing to pull out all the stops to make sure this guy does not sit in the White House again, you know. And, you know, and it's kind of funny, you know, because we remember when Michelle Obama, you know, we remember when the Obamas were in office, Barack Obama, and Michelle Obama made a statement. She said, you know, white people act like they don't know that I exist. So I'm going through Harris Teeter the other day to get me something to eat before I started washing my clothes. And whose face do I see on Life magazine, on the cover of Life magazine? Michelle Obama. And I'm sitting here like, now this woman is no longer first lady, but we still see her face pop up every now and then. You don't see Laura Bush's face popping up. Well, of course you see Hillary Clinton because, you know, she deep into politics. But you don't see a lot of these other first wives pictures popping up on magazine covers. The only ones you basically see are Hillary Clinton and Michelle Obama. But these people have the nerve, the unmitigated gall to go out there and start talking about systemic racism. I have not one time seen Melania Trump on the face of any of these magazines, not one time. But Michelle Obama can get out here. She can make the false accusation that, you know, people think that she's the help. And, you know, because someone asked her to take some off the top shelf that was racist and all that crazy mess and everything. But yet and still, you see her face plastered on the cover of these magazines from time to time. Now something is up with that. And see, once again, I don't understand why people's common sense don't kick in and say, wait a minute, Michelle Obama keeps saying that white folks are ignoring her, but I've never seen Melania Trump on a magazine cover, but I see Michelle all the time. You know, Oprah Winfrey, same thing. She keeps talking about systemic racism. She's one of the most photographed women in the world, probably. But there comes a time where common sense has to rule the day, not your feelings, not your emotions. And see, that's the reason why I have this program, because I don't want to be moved by emotion. I don't want to be moved by, okay, you did something to a black person, so, you know, that's doing something to me, and I'm going to take it personal, you know, without knowing all the circumstances that surrounded whatever happened to this black person. You know, it boggles the mind sometimes. It really does. You're sitting there and you're like, man, why did people think like this? I mean, why do people go on the emotions instead of using the brains that God has given them with the gray matter up there in their brains? And I can kind of guess why people would rather go with emotion than with using their brains, is because using their brains takes a level of work. Now, it's not like, you know, picking up something heavy and putting it somewhere else or anything like that, but it does take some work to, you know, get your thought processes running to the point where you can actually critically think for yourself. You know, it does take a little bit of work, take some brain power, you know. People might not see it as work, but it does take some work, you know. I was telling people today that it takes some work to, you know, because I want to get into photography. And people think, oh, photography is just, you know, just point and shoot, just aim and shoot, aim and shoot. No. Once again, you have to go into the depths of what really makes a picture a great picture. And to do that, once again, you have to go deep into the recesses of your brain and learn some things in order to get a better picture. You know, you have to learn the ISO and the aperture and the f-stops and all that. You have to learn how to control your flash, how to aim your flash in a certain way to get you a flattering picture. But if you just think, oh, taking a picture, oh, yeah, that's simple. I'll just get a camera and just click, 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 click. No, it doesn't work that way. It takes time. It takes composition. You have to compose your picture to the point where you're like, okay, this is the picture I want. Boom. It's almost like doing a painting, be honest with you. It's almost like that. But see, that's the same thing when it comes to using your God-given common sense. And it doesn't take a lot, you know, a study to be able to use common sense. It really doesn't. All of us are born with it. Some of us choose not to use it. And some of us, we're like, okay, well, you know, I want to use common sense. What is the better way for me to handle this situation? And too many times we go in the wrong direction, and next thing you know, in the future, we're sitting here like, okay, well, this is what happened. And that's not what happened. Everyone still believes that black people are being hunted down in this country because of what happened to Michael Brown and Trayvon Martin and all these other kids, without people going into detail about, you know, surrounding those cases. Now, those cases are tragic. Don't get me wrong. You know, what happened to George Floyd, that was tragic. But that had, after, you know, after seeing that movie, The Fall of Minneapolis, I'm totally convinced that Derek Chauvin didn't do one cotton-picking thing wrong. You know, after watching that documentary, I'm like, nah, Derek Chauvin shouldn't even be in jail. He was just doing his job. But his police chief threw him under the bus. For what? Now, Minneapolis is probably one of the most crime-ridden cities in the United States right now. Because you wanted to appease the masses. See, that's where democracy really comes in at. You know, democracy, I think someone said it was mob rule. That's basically what that is. That's why democracy by itself cannot be allowed to run a country. It can be part of how you run a country, but by itself, you can't use democracy to run a country because all it is mob rule. And that's what we're seeing in a lot of our cities, a lot of mob rule. A certain demographic, they get up there, they start to cry and whine about, oh, we're not getting equal this and equal that and everything. And then everybody's like, okay, we're going to appease you. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. That's what we're seeing going on in the movie industry right now. Disney done took a nosedive because they wanted to go the woke route. And my wife and I, we went to see that Godzilla movie, Godzilla Minus One. Now, I've been a Godzilla fan since I was a kid, and I can tell you that only one Godzilla movie really stood out to me when I was a kid, and that was that first Godzilla movie, the very first one that came out in 1954. All the others, you know, the acting was bad and everything, but I was still a Godzilla fan. I used to love to see Godzilla get in the fights, but I saw this one, and I wasn't really thinking it was going to be that good of a movie, because Godzilla movies, for the most part, are not good movies. But I told my wife, I said, I'm hearing a lot of people saying a good thing about this movie. Let's go see this movie. My wife was like, okay, let's go see it. And now when my wife tells you, when my wife agrees with you that this was a good movie, it was a good movie. You know, and she sits there and she agrees with you. She sat there, and my wife is definitely not a Godzilla fan. She despised that Godzilla movie that came out in 2014. She despised that movie. But she saw this one. She was like, oh, that was a good movie. And I'm sitting there like, oh, my goodness, she agrees with me. Now, I gave the movie a 9.5. She gave it an 8. To her, it was still a good movie. And we're looking at movies like this that was made for like $15 million. It's done reached the $100 million mark. And now it is kicking a lot of other movies' butts right now. Simply because someone said, look, we're going to get rid of all this woke nonsense. We're just going to craft a good story, and we're going to make a good movie. And that's exactly what they did. None of the wokeness in there. You know, none of this demographic stuff and politics and everything. They just made a good movie. So, but anyway, you all, I'm coming down to the end of the, coming down to the end of the show. Once again, my rule for the first of the month is going to kick in again. So next weekend, I won't be having a show. You know, I don't even know what I'm thinking about right now. But next weekend I won't be having a show because it's the first weekend or whatever. But in a couple of weeks, God willing, I should have another edition of Black by Color Only. So you all take care of yourselves, stay safe out there, stay warm or cool wherever you are in this country right now. Because, you know, we got a little variation in temperatures right now. But anyway, you all stay good. Stay safe. This is Vincent E. Brown. I am signing off. And until the next time, I'll see you on the rebound. Y'all take care of yourselves.